The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'm not there today. I'm down south. I'm in the deep south today, but for one day. Luckily, we have the one and only Mark Davis up from Dallas, the estimable Mark Davis, to fill in for me. Talk to you about the Cowboys, recognize Ohio State football preeminence, do all the things we do on Friday and have a good time. In your pros hands. Take it away, Mark.
Thank you very, very much. I will try to tick off as many of those things on the list as I can. It's kind of funny because any time I fill in for Hugh, he's always suggested that I'm going to pound you with all kinds of minutiae about the Dallas Cowboys, which has largely not been true because the Cowboys have been pretty disappointing for a lot of recent history. And then the NFL itself has been so disappointing in some extremely recent history, and I just haven't paid a whole lot of attention, quite frankly. This year, I decided to show some grace. The kneeling has stopped. The Cowboys appear to be actually pretty good, fingers crossed there, as far as recognizing the preeminence of Ohio State. Might be best to leave that to the master, and Hugh will be back on Monday. So here we are on a Friday. Mark Davis from 660 AM, The Answer, in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I hope that all is well with you. Happy Friday. Happy October. Wow. Three quarters of this year, no math. My understanding is there was to be no math. Three quarters of this year is done. How we doing? Because you remember New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve seems like 5 years ago. Even it's funny. COVID made 2020 seem like it was 3 years long. The Biden presidency has made this year seem like it's 20 years long. When will we get out of this disaster? And that is a lot of where our attention is properly focused. Dwayne has fired up so much wonderful audio. I'm going to play a bunch of it for you. I'm here with you for two of the 3 hours. The third hour is Hugh's always sublime meeting with Larry Arn in the Hillsdale Hour. So let's see what we can pack in. Being the first hour, we'll obviously do a little bit of college football with Doug. And in the final segment, our buddy Sonny Bunch is going to review a movie or two. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to blather about a couple of things. I got actually a question or two for Dwayne. And 1-800-520-1234. If you want to hop in and create a little early telephone action, we are ready to accommodate you. 1-800-520-1234. And some of the questions I have, it's funny, I have my own show here in DFW every morning. I did the America First with Dr. Gorka yesterday, which is always an adrenaline boost. And I was talking to people about the path out of this nightmare. Because let's stipulate that this is the worst presidency of our lifetime. You may not want to stipulate that. You may look back, go, oh, Nixon. Don't get Hugh started on Nixon. Yeah, that did not end well, but Nixon was a genius in so many ways. And as far as Clinton and Obama, the other contenders, after just a fraction of a year of these people, Obama seems positively innocuous and Clinton seems positively Churchillian. And I've run that by some people. Dwayne, welcome. How you doing? It's great to be hanging out with you guys. As always, appreciate it. I got a few more years on the planet than you do, but is it too glib to conclude this early worst presidency ever, or at least in the lifetime of anyone listening?
Certainly. I mean, I am not a historian, but I have studied a lot of history doing this show for 20 plus years.
It will happen.
You got to go back to Buchanan. And Buchanan, holds a very special place as being a fairly ineffectual president, being that he basically got us into a civil war and all. Yeah. Joe Biden is awfully bad. Everywhere you look, whether it's immigration, whether it's the debacle on the spending bills, whether it's the catastrophic Afghanistan debacle. Mm-hmm. We have done something here in Afghanistan that this country has never done, which is leave countless amounts of Americans and green card holders behind. It's just a train wreck wherever you look.
So the next question is, it's all his name is on the administration, so it accrues to his reputational detriment. But now it's kind of a parlor game because I don't think we'll ever really know. Is he doing all these things? Are there invisible hands? Are there marionette strings attached to him? And if so, from where? Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, the squad? I don't know. Somebody yesterday said, I'll tell you what it is, Mark, because you don't hear him from him very much. It's Obama. And I rejected this completely. Obama this week stepped forward to say that open borders are unsustainable. And I just said, I almost said, sir, I miss you. And I, of course, mean that hugely tongue-in-cheek. Everything's relative, as I said.
I think
Obama's enjoying his current life on his terms. There's no way Obama wants to bury his days in Zoom meetings with the inner cabal to run the Biden presidency.
Yeah, you see, I don't think that's the case. I think what's going on is Joe Biden is the one that is making the decisions. He is just an infirm old man, and he has a staff around him that are trying to protect him and isolate him to try to keep the world from seeing how infirm he is.
Then has the cognitive decline, which Hugh has very tactfully defined, because no one here is a neurologist. We can't diagnose, but we've all seen it. We've all seen the glaze in the eyes in our loved ones and relatives. We've all seen
the clips
occasional,
even when he was vice president on
YouTube.
Thank you.
Exactly. And this is not reckless.
Right.
Back
in his vice president days, he would be peppered with questions and he could respond right away and carry a cogent thought. He was wrong on policy. He's always been wrong on policy.
But he was coherent.
But
exactly.
He was coherent. You could at exactly. least understand a sentence he was trying to make.
Yeah.
He stumbles so much now trying to reach for a thought. He is an infirm old man. He just
is part
down.
Of that decline. If your theory is correct, that it really is him, that it's hard to imagine that he has, you know, his actual hands on the levers, but if it really is him, is part of this decline an enormous pendulum shift to the left? Because this not only is this not cognitively the Joe Biden of 20 years ago, it's not ideologically the Joe Biden of 20 years ago, I don't think.
Well, it's not ideologically the Joe Biden we've known, but what we do know about Joe Biden, and this has been so for darn near 50 years, he has zero political instincts. They've always been off. He has been off on every foreign policy decision, famously said by former Defense Secretary Robert Gates, you know, for 40 years.
Man.
He has no political instincts. And as poor as his political instincts are, Kamala Harris is worse.
Yep. Yep. Which is why, just to wrap this up, and then we'll get into the next segment, some of the wonderful, wonderful audio and video you have loaded from some of the budget struggles and some fascinating abortion issue testimony yesterday and a number of things that we'll examine. If anybody wants to join us early on, we're glad to talk to some folks in the first hour, 1-800-520-1234, 1-800-520-1234. So a lot of people are wondering, can this Biden presidency actually last? The impeachment is in the wind. I don't know if I want to mess with that. Clinton got impeached once, Andrew Johnson once, Trump twice, whatever. I think the country is impeachment weary. There's zero chance of him being removed from office, so let's just not even do that. It makes us look petty. It makes us look distracted. 25th Amendment, who knows? I don't think at any point his own cabinet is going to throw him under the bus. So I believe we are going to wheeze through this term of Joe Biden, and then just please let us focus on the future.
We have to get the House back.
Yep.
Keep the Senate so that there's at least a check so that he can limit the damage he can do. And then you've got in 24, there's no way that Joe Biden's going to be the nominee in 24. I would be stunned if he's got the energy to try to go through another national campaign again.
Will he even run?
Right.
I mean, and listen, I think people will get with him and say, Joe, if you're thinking about running, stop it. I think it's a totally open seat because nobody wants the spectacle of a weakened, rudderless Joe Biden being humiliated by being denied the nomination by his own party. Right. Someone will get a hold of him. So
I think what's going to happen is by the time we get to the midterms, if the sentiment, if the poll numbers, inflation comes roaring in 22, which is expected, especially if we dump $5 trillion on the economy, all this stuff goes on. And if they get hammered, Democrats get hammered in the 22 midterms, Joe Biden's presidency at that point is effectively over. He is a lame duck at that point.
One can only hope. And interestingly, we spend so much time, especially here in conservative talk radio, talking about the 2024 field for our side. If what we've just spent time talking about is true, what about the Democrat Party? I don't think Kamala Harris inherits this nomination. Are you kidding? Her popularity is in the tank. She's just not good. She's not politically skilled. She's a crushing disappointment.
She didn't make it out of Iowa.
Exactly right. And so that can't be her. So do we open up the possibility that Democrats may, I mean, rank and file Democrats, just voters who happen to vote Democrat, might say, listen, there's so much attention to your mansions and your cinemas. Maybe it's time for a Democrat nominee that's not a bug-eyed socialist radical.
Well, you would think, wouldn't you?
Except, one would think, but I don't strategize for them. I don't know.
Considering the squad's power right now and Bernie Sanders and the media, it's hard to see them coming to grips.
DeSantis and Ayanna Presley, 2024. Who's with me? All right. I'm Mark Davis in for Hugh. Sit tight. Much more to come.
Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that 3-week starter pack, $19.95.
And if she asks you why, you can tell her that I told you that I'm tired. Castles in the air.
I know I could have done American Pie, could have done Vincent, went for a little Castles in the Air for Don McLean. It is McLean, not McLean, correct? Let's notify him. And if we do, let's say happy birthday. Don McLean is 76 today. Little Castles in the Air. In 60 seconds, we're going to say hi to Sonny Bunch, talk some pop culture, some movies. First, let me tell you about your freedoms as we get ready to head into the weekend. Pause for a moment. Consider the blessing that we all enjoy with our constitutionally guaranteed liberties, which we have, at least for the moment. Free speech, freedom of religion, sanctity of life. Your rights are real, and they are under attack. Did you catch, and Hugh chronicled this so well, that a leading candidate for governor of Virginia stunned the debate audience by saying he was proud to have vetoed legislation that would have alerted parents when there was sexually explicit content in instructional materials. That was Terry McAuliffe. And asked to clarify that, he said if elected governor, he would not let parents tell schools what to teach. That is now the stuff of legend. Protecting our cherished freedoms from government interference, including our parental rights that we cherish, is why it's so urgent that you join me in supporting Alliance Defending Freedom. Go to HughHewitt.com. Click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner, and if your rights as a parent are worth $100 to defend, I think they are, click on that and go all in for a $100 donation this morning to the Freedom Fund to help ADF continue fighting pivotal court battles and be ready when your freedoms are threatened as well. The Constitution doesn't get suspended during a pandemic. ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom, is always there to be ready to help you or your college-age student, or your church. So right now, today, go to HughHewitt.com, click on the ADF banner at the top of the page. That's HughHewitt.com, and click on the ADF banner, or go on the phone to 866-359-9644. HughHewitt.com, click the ADF banner, our friends at Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's a friend of the show, a segment I always enjoy when Hugh does it, and what a joy for me to be able to do it, filling in. Sonny Bunch is here. Hey, Sonny, good morning. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Great to hear from you. And as I ask what is in the pipeline that you'd like to draw some attention to today, I want to ask you as a critic, as a maven, as a consumer of the culture, where you stand on the notion of the experience of consuming new film in big theaters versus just sitting in your living room and streaming. Life is different for you. It's different for all of us in this last year and a fraction.
Yeah, it's been weird trying to figure out how to get folks back into the theaters. And, you know, the studios have been kind of helpful with this, but not entirely. You know, for instance, one of the things I want to talk about today, The Many Saints of Newark, is available simultaneously on HBO Max and in theaters. And HBO Max has done this several times. Warner Brothers, of course, kind of famously put their whole slate simultaneously on HBO Max and in theaters this year. And they've done this several times now, most recently with Cry Macho. I don't know if you saw Cry Macho. the new Clint Eastwood, but it was available in theaters and on HBO Max simultaneously. And what we have seen basically every time they have done this is that people have chosen to stay at home and watch things at home. If they watch them at all, we don't have any real good numbers on what sort of traffic, what sort of ratings HBO Max is getting, but the folks have not necessarily shown up in theaters. I mean, I think Cry Macho did like $5 million opening weekend.
Yeah.
It's first weekend, which is not great. So the trick of getting folks back into theaters is twofold, really. They're first is the safety discussion. You know, people still worried about the disease, people still worried about COVID, which I understood more kind of at the beginning of this than I do at this point. You know, if you're vaccinated and most people are vaccinated and most people who are worried about coronavirus are vaccinated, you know, you're going to be fine, especially in a movie theater, which is not by its nature a very dangerous place. I mean, literally just the shape of the room, the size of the ceilings, you know, how spread out everyone is,
yes.
Especially in the newer auditoriums with the big plush seating, you know, and everybody facing the same way, facing, you know, looking at the screen, nobody's really talking. It's just not, a place where there has been a ton of COVID spread found, period, in the contact tracing literature. So there's that element. And then there's also the convenience element. This is the HBO Max dilemma, also the Disney Plus Premier Access dilemma, and all the other day and date, as they call it.
We are convenience addicts, and I'm not immune. I've been into an actual big theater precisely twice in the last year and a half, both of them in the last 3 or 4 months, one for Quiet Place 2 and for Black Widow. And I think I loved both experiences more because it was a big screen with big sound, and I got a pretty sweet setup at the house. But I still love going into that. And both theaters had like 12 people in them because everybody's terrified. I'm an enormous advocate for not losing from our culture the big theater experience, the communal viewing, which I think we've largely lost.
Yeah. I mean, the communal viewing aspect is important, I think, especially for some movies like Quiet Place Part Two, where, you know, you've got scares and you've got, you know, people gasping all at the same time. The other issue here is you mentioned the big screen and the big sound and all that. And that's true. That is absolutely a big part of the theatrical viewing experience for sure. But one thing that I think is underrated and underappreciated is not just the big screen and the viewing things together, but also the isolation. And what I mean is, like, you are away from your phone. You have your phone, but you're not looking at your phone, you know, for that 2 hours, because you're hopefully a good person who is, you know, not, you know, texting and calling people in a movie theater. Right. But, you know, but like you don't have your laptop there to check your email, you know, check your work Slacks and that sort of thing. Right. You're focused on the screen. You're focused on what's happening on the screen. And that just makes for a better viewing experience.
You know what? Having you mention that, it just gave another value here that is contrary to modern human nature, is you're not in control. When you're in a theater, you can't pause it and check a football score. You have willingly subjugated your priorities, and you're going to say, I'm going to walk into this room, I'm going to sit down for 2 hours or whatever, and I'm going to let it wash over me. I'm going to relinquish this control juice that usually flows through my veins. And I think there's psychological value in doing that every once in a while.
Absolutely. And, you know, I understand the argument that, you know, people want to pause to be able to go to the bathroom.
Sure.
I also occasionally, every once in a while in the theater after a, you know, giant 70-ounce, you know, soda.
Depth charge size iced tea. Exactly.
I want to head to the bathroom myself. But I agree. I mean, it is there's something to be said for just to giving up a little bit of control and letting the art take over.
Well, I didn't mean to bog down, but I was fascinated. So let's get to what you did want to talk about. I'm fascinated. I'm, of course, as the law requires, a huge Sopranos fan. Many Saints of Newark is a prequel. Does it work?
Well, it's interesting. So the Many Saints of Newark is a Sopranos story, right? It's a prequel to what happened on the show. The action takes place. It starts in 1968, 1967, something like that, in Newark. And the Vietnam War is the backdrop. You know, there are race riots in Newark, that sort of thing. And there are two, there are kind of two separate movies at war with each other in this picture. The first is a like fairly, it's nostalgic. There's a nostalgia trip, to this, to, see the younger versions of like Silvio Dante or Polly Walnuts. You know, or Livia Soprano, those guys, those characters, to see them at their, as, you know, younger characters. And I don't think that part of the movie really works. It feels, it almost feels like David Chase is kind of making fun of us a little bit, I think.
Really? In what way?
And then, yeah, I mean, it's, I that's probably too harsh of a way to put it, but just, I mean, there's nothing to call it except for the impression that the character who was playing Silvio Dante does of Steve Van Zandt playing Silvio Dante.
Gotcha. I understand.
Kind of cringy. Okay. It's just cringy. But then there's a second story, which is which feels like a more original, kind of more interesting story that, Chase is trying to tell about, you know, I don't know, race in America, whatever. But that is about Dickie Moltisanti, who is Christopher Moltisanti's father. If folks fans of the show will remember Christopher Moltisanti as the cousin of Tony Soprano, who
Michael Imperioli,
played by Michael Imperioli, who, you know, Tony kills in the final season after a car accident. He's trying to be a good mobster, but also a good person. He's trying to lead a good life. He's trying to steer, Tony Soprano, who's played by Michael Gandolfini, away from the life of crime that he will wind up in. Dickie is forced to go to mob war with an African-American mobster played by Leslie Odom Jr., name of Harold McBrayer, in this film. And, you know, it's like the black gangs versus the Italian gangs with the backdrop of all of the race stuff in Newark. It's pretty interesting. That part of it is pretty interesting. But the Soprano stuff is, again, it's a little, it just feels, forced and kind of, again, it is, nostalgia and not the good kind. And I think, again, I think Chase understands this and is kind of skeptical of it. I think he's winking at us that, you know, this is not necessarily what he wanted to do, but it's what he was allowed to do.
I think in our final 30 seconds, does young Gandolfini pull it off?
You know, he does. He's very good. And he's the ads for this have been a little bit misleading because he's only really in about the last half of the movie.
Okay, gotcha.
The first half of the movie, young Tony Soprano is much younger. He's like elementary school age.
Well, I will tell you, your review of it has done what a good review should. It has made me want to see it even more. As your writing and speaking tends to do, the great Sonny Bunch at the Bulwark, at Sonny Bunch on Twitter. Thanks, sir. Mark Davis. Let's do a little college football. It's my bad, Keith Jackson, as Doug joins us next on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
Called you so many times today, and I guess it's all true what your girlfriend say. But you don't ever want to see me
again. Little Vintage Police, first album, Outlandos de Amor. Why? Because it's Sting's birthday. How old? Three guesses. 70. Sting is 70 tomorrow, reaching into the
the weekend for some birthdays and reaching into the world of college football. What a pleasure it is to say hi to Doug Lemerese, Cleveland.com, all kinds of blogging, all kinds of podcasting. I love this segment. I love it. Doug, welcome. Nice to have you. Mark Davis down here in Texas. But I have a responsibility. When you and Hugh get together, there's an infusion of Ohio Buckeye State love. So I have questions as if you were still here, as if you were actually still doing the show. So, Doug, how can we displace the 10 pretenders ranked ahead of Ohio State so they can be awarded the national championship that is their birthright?
Well, there are some interesting games coming up that could displace some people, but Ohio State is also looking better, right? People aren't used
yes,
to Ohio State losing early.
Objectively, I will admit they absolutely are.
There's chaos in college football, which people are very accustomed to the same teams making the playoff every year. And this feels like a year where it's not going to be the same teams. And we saw one of those teams probably get kicked out last week in Clemson, who had made the previous six college football playoffs. They lost in double overtime to NC State. A two-loss team has never made the college football playoff. They're already 2-2. I think Clemson's done. So that's one team probably.
And so what is the reason? Do they just miss Trevor Lawrence that much? Or are they now just, pardon the usage here for Clemson, a paper tiger?
Well done.
Thank you.
DJ Uiagalelei is a five-star quarterback, but he has never looked comfortable all year. There are questions about their offensive line this year, but Mark, this happens when a powerhouse struggles. People are wondering, is their offense stale? What they've done for so long, does it still work? So there are some fundamental questions. Of course they missed Trevor Lawrence, but they had a guy, a second-year guy who was highly rated, ready to step in, and it hasn't worked so far. So I think they have to look inside a little bit and see if they have to, you know, run things a little differently on offense.
Let's take a look at the NFL slate. I'm going to channel Hugh for my second question. How many points will the Browns be favored by in the Super Bowl?
You know, I have also asked that question this year. People
I'm
in Cleveland
with you. I'm playing with you.
Very excited.
Well, the Browns are great. The Browns are at Minnesota. I would think that's a W.
Yeah.
Would we not?
I actually think the Browns are going to lose this week.
Why?
It's Minnesota has looked really good. They probably should be 2-1 or 3-0. They're 1-2. They missed a field goal to lose a game. Kevin Stefanski, the Browns coach, spent 14 years as an assistant in Minnesota. I think that's got to get to you, Mark. You're going back to Minnesota for the first time.
Yep.
Pull on the heartstrings a little bit. I wonder, and then Minnesota just has a very efficient offense that gets the ball out quickly, negates the Myles Garrett pass rush. I think the Vikings win this week.
There is something about when a player or a coach returns to an area of past triumphs and how that works out. Brady going back to Foxborough would be interesting, except the Patriots simply are not that good anymore.
Well, it's hard because Mac Jones, their rookie quarterback, who was Alabama last year, I mean, he's a little bit of a Tom Brady clone. But guess what? He's a rookie quarterback. And all the rookie quarterbacks in the NFL are having a tough time so far this year. That includes Trevor Lawrence. That includes Justin Fields from Ohio State last year. Zach Wilson from BYU. Nobody's looking great. It's a tough spot for Mac Jones. But, again, the Patriots, sometimes you think that Patriots magic is going to be in there. Bill Belichick is the greatest coach in NFL history. But they still don't look like themselves. A lot of people were high on the Patriots this year. Kind of hasn't looked that way so far.
Let me do one self-serving thing for folks who know me. We just don't know what to do here in Cowboys land. We've been so starved for upper echelons of success for a quarter century. 2-1. Dak looks great coming back from a horrible injury. We got to win this dreadful NFC East, but how deeply dare we dream in Cowboys land?
You know, I think when you have Dak, you always have a chance. He's a top five quarterback when healthy. When you add Tony Pollard to Ezekiel Elliott in that backfield, I think the explosiveness outside with C.D. Lamb as a young receiver complementing Amari Cooper and those guys. You know, Jalen Smith is a great linebacker. Sometimes you wonder, can the defense do its job as the offense piles up points? As you said, the NFC East is not very good. So I do think, you know, once you get to the playoffs and you get to the Rams and the Bucks and some other really good teams in the NFC, maybe the Cowboys are in trouble. I think they have a really good chance to win that division, though. If that helps, does that help at all?
It absolutely does. It delivers a kind of the cautious optimism, which I already was beginning to feel. So, Doug, listen, I love this segment when Hugh does it. What a pleasure it is to meet you and say hi and send everybody to Cleveland.com, to the CFB Playoff Show, to your Twitter feed there at Doug Lemerises, Lesmerises. There will be a quiz. It is wonderful to meet you, sir. Thanks for being on.
Mark, very fun. All the best.
You betcha. Doug Lemerises. I love this. Because as Hugh properly says, on Fridays, I mean, you know, are we going to do debt limit all 3 hours all week long? Friday, we're going to some movies. We're going to do some sports. But hey, the first hour is done. So now we're going to do a little bit of heavy lifting. We are going to talk a little bit about the disasters that Biden has taken us toward militarily, fiscally, culturally, and we'll start to do it when we return for hour number two of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Mark Davis filling in. Glad you are here. Happy Friday and happy October.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com.
So we want to throw some love to Lindsey Buckingham. A couple of reasons. He turned 72 on Sunday, and I just think he needs the love. Lindsey Buckingham there with the lead vocal on Blue Letter. This is from the Fleetwood Mac album of 1975, when he and Stevie Nicks joined the already existing, already accomplished band and turned them into just pop sensations. Lindsey Buckingham, he got kicked out of Fleetwood Mac, and you got Neil Finn doing the vocals, and Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers doing the guitar. They just had like their biggest grossing tour ever, while Lindsey Buckingham may well be eating dog food by this time. I'm not sure. It's not going well for him. So let's just wish him a good birthday here at 72. So when I fill in for Hugh Hewitt, let me pull the curtain back and tell you a little bit of how I do this. I'm front loaded with 14 things I want to talk about. But then I go looking for columns and pieces and blogs and newspapers and things that just raise an eyebrow and seem like, this is something I've been thinking about. This is something I've been talking about on the show that I host here in DFW and various outposts on the national scene when I get to fill in. And I found a Michael McKenna column in the Washington Times, and the headline is "Time for Trump and the GOP to Get Over the 2020 Election." Well, okay, what does that look like? Michael McKenna is here. Pleasure to meet you, sir. How are you doing?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Fantastic. Thanks for being here. So when I saw the column and read it, I processed it in the following way, and I'll give you 30 seconds on this and then just hand you the talking stick back and see what your thought is. People always ask me, hey, Mark, what do you think about all those audits? We need more forensic audits. We need 47 forensic audits so we can know what happened in 2020. I am all about understanding how we got hosed in 2020. There were all kinds of votes that were accepted in various states that should not have been, as rules and norms were just dashed against the rocks on phony COVID urgency. Now, that having been said, we ain't going to flip any states. We're not going to learn numerically that Trump won anything. I already know that we got hosed and every state is working on making our system better. Aren't we much better served by focusing all this energy on getting good, solid laws to protect election integrity in 22, 24, picking good candidates and looking forward more than backward?
Yeah, I find all of that very difficult to disagree with, right? Were things not right? Absolutely. You know, were things changed because of COVID? Yes. Have those changes been addressed in most places? Yeah, they have been, right? We kind of reeled it back in. Have we had almost a year now of this, the forensic stuff, the audits, the this, the that, and the other thing? Yeah. Is it going anywhere? No. And, I don't want to be that guy.
No,
but
I know.
even if you woke up tomorrow morning and decided, hey, we think there was legitimate voter fraud in that state, there's no way for a state, there's no mechanism for a state to uncertify its election results. The current president is not leaving absent death, impeachment, or resignation. Or the 2024 election. Those are your four options.
I choose D out of that group. And you phrased it, I don't want to be that guy, as a wonderful sentiment, because all these people, they call, and I can hear the Christmas morning thrill. Like, at some point, there's going to be some golden moment where we absolutely learn that Trump really did win Arizona or Pennsylvania, and it's simply not going to happen. But the good news, I try to wrap this in some good news, is that it is baked in, that the 2020 election was flawed. Its result was suspect, and that is not acceptable. So let's take that, go with it. States are doing things to improve. My state of Texas, chiefly among them, doing things to make sure, as best we can in a human system, that we don't get hosed again in 22 and 24. Will it be perfect? No. Will there be some type of fraud? Yes, there always will be. But I think we're on it, and I think we can start to focus on what we're far better served by, and that's putting up the kind of actual candidates where we can get the House back, maybe get the Senate back, and then get the White House back in 24. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and it's hard to think about timing when you're living day to day, but the reality of it is we're 13 months away from an election cycle, right now,
yep.
which means we're picking primary, we're picking primary folks, we're raising money, we're talking about issues, and all that stuff that you kind of need to be doing now is getting impeded by the amount of mind share that's being spent on, hey, we got hosed, we got stolen, we got robbed. Yeah, I get all that, but it doesn't help you fix the problem, right?
I think that is phrased beautifully. Let us stipulate that 2020 was a flawed election. Great. Okay. Pin stuck in it. Got it. Let history bake that in. If anybody ever asks us about it, that's what we'll say. But now, I think that I'm concerned that there's only so much, energy in the tank, and that we are getting distracted from what we absolutely listen. The primaries are just right around the bend, because we can't just have Republicans win. They got to be the right kind of Republicans. So let me ask you how you think what the kind of winning strategies are. It's probably too glib to say that this Biden administration is so horribly positioned that we're just going to walk to a wave election in 22. It's that kind of talk scares me. It might be true, but I don't even want to speak those words, because I know there's no such thing as jinxes, but there is such a thing as overconfidence. What do you think?
Yeah, not only is there such a thing as overconfidence, everybody has it. When you look at the polling on the current president's plan, is $3.5 trillion plan to change the whole world and make us socialists. The most disturbing thing is parts of it are very popular, right? So you ask what needs to get done. If I could, if we could just kind of turn some of that mind share and use it to educate people about this is actually toxic for a bunch of reasons, and here's why, right? We're not even doing that kind of basic thing. What I worry about is they pass legislation like this, Democrats go and say, hey, we've given you a bunch of free money. Who doesn't like free money? And we haven't laid any of the groundwork about what that actually means in the long term. That's why the wasting of time now is so important, right? Because we're not using our time to educate voters properly on this stuff.
That's beautifully put, because we can sit here at the beginning of October and say the primaries are a half a year away, the full election is more than a year away. We got all the time in the world. No, we don't, because we're trying to tell a country. And dyed-in-the-wool Democrats are never going to be peeled away from voting for Biden or the Democrats of their choice. But we've got a big mushy middle in America that we've got to make a case cogently and effectively that the current ruling class just ain't getting it done. And please, please honor us by giving us a chance. So Michael McKenna is here, Washington Times columnist. So in a column that talks about looking forward rather than backward, here's where I've clearly got to go, and I'm everybody's answer differs. I'm interested in yours. Is part of looking forward clinging to and embracing Trump-style energy, the Trumpian gift for hammering the left, but maybe finding it in another package? Maybe DeSantis, maybe Cotton, maybe Pompeo, but the Trump 2.0, good idea or not so good idea?
Yeah. Okay. That's a particularly difficult one for me, right? I worked in the White House for the president. I think very highly of him. I am fully aware of all of his flaws. I think the correct answer to that is, right at the moment, sitting here in late 2021, is not a decision we need to make for another 24 months, right? So I'm inclined to not make decisions unless I have to make decisions on this. Having said that, and I'm not going to try to weasel your answer.
Thank you.
President's already lost once, right? And unless you can make a convincing case that something's going to change, that there are going to be people who voted against him in 2020 who will vote for him in 2024,
yeah,
I think you probably need to think about a different vehicle for the same basket of messages and actions, right?
I deeply appreciate that answer, because the reasons that I agree with you are really nothing but compliments for him. He is so strong, so galvanizing, that he energized two kinds of voters in 2020, conservative voters and liberal voters. They moved heaven and earth. They crawled on broken glass to vote against him, and I don't want to give him the chance to do that again. Democrats feel like they've learned how to beat him once, and they might figure they've learned how to beat him twice. Where if we can get a DeSantis who seems to – well, let me ask you. You are a presence in the Trump White House. Is DeSantis overpraised? Are we just so pleased, Lord, eager to find somebody that has a kind of a Trumpian mantle? What's your assessment of DeSantis?
Yeah, voters are a lot like 16-year-old boys. As a mass, right? They fixate on one pretty girl after another. It's always hard to figure out when the wheel's going to stop. So I get that the flavor of the month is DeSantis, and rightfully so, right? I mean, mm-hmm. He's a very impressive guy. So is Governor Abbott from Texas, right? So is Mike Pompeo, right? There's, mm-hmm. there's four or five people who I think could be president tomorrow morning and do a quite good job. And I think that's the other part of this question, right? Do you have somebody who could do a good job? And the answer to that is yes. We have three or four people you could put in the Oval Office tomorrow morning, and they'd have a pretty good understanding of what needed to be done.
So when we take
is that
a look
an answer?
No, it's a very good answer, in fact, because none of these are three-word propositions. You got to see what where there's so much that the future will yield. What makes sense right now may not make sense 6 months from now, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If Trump does run, is it everybody else's responsibility just to bug out and let the inevitable happen? Or are we – this may be another reason why, God bless you, sir, I love you, probably not a good idea for your run, is from Pompeo to Cotton to Nikki Haley to who knows who, he would just have to bludgeon all of them. He would just have to steamroll all of them, because that's what he does in primaries. We've seen it. We've seen this movie.
Yeah, and that's the risk, right? As we sit here right now, there's probably limited doubt that he'd win in a Republican primary in 2024, mm-hmm. and that's a bit of a pickle, right? But the other thing is the massiveness of that potential win kind of shrinks as time goes on, which makes you think there may be an expiration date on this.
I think that's beautifully put. What an opportune thing, I got to tell you, not to break my arm patting myself on the back, but I'm glad I found your column, and you're a wonderful guest. And Michael McKenna, a wonderful writer. Check him out in the Washington Times. Pleasure to meet you, sir. Thank you for being here. Speaking of people who craft a skillful word or two, Tarzana Joe and his poem of the week when we come back.
Hear the latest reporting and analysis on the big stories of the day on the Daybreak Insider podcast. It's top-notch reporting from SRN News, along with the sharpest insight from Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, and the voices of townhall.com. The Daybreak Insider podcast. It's your first look at today's top stories. Available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and at SalemPodcastNetwork.com.
Invoked the great Cat Stevens not too many shows ago. Cat Stevens, Teaser and the Fire Cat. Loved those album titles of his back in the 70s. Bitter Blue, this also had Peace Train and Morning Has Broken. Cat Stevens, Teaser and the Fire Cat, released 50 years ago today. So there's a little chart history for you. And so my usual Friday routine
is getting ready for my own proud, happy local show here on 660 AM The Answer in Dallas-Fort Worth, and driving around and listening to Hugh Hewitt on the way in. And on Fridays, that means I get to hear him bandy a few things back and forth with Tarzana Joe. Well, look at my good fortune. Joe is here now, and I get to hear today's poem delivered to me as if in a personal audience, and I couldn't be more privileged. Joe, welcome back. How are you doing, sir?
Fine. You're always so kind and gracious when we have the opportunity to.
Well, I mean every word. Words mean things, and there's no better champion of that than you. So what do we have in store today?
You might not feel that way after this poem.
Okay.
But
I will withhold. I'll withhold further comment. We'll review afterward.
All right. I make no claim to higher calling. If I'm not fallen, well, I'm falling. But here's a fact, and you all know it's prophets way back when were poets. Old Moses said we all should be one. You know a prophet when you see one. And with so much that needs decrying, I feel the need for prophesying. Here's a point those prophets stress. No country it was like this one blessed. For with great faith our leaders led. Important, as de Tocqueville said. Now leaders claim to be devout while throwing all the doctrine out. And willingly so many followed, eagerly their nonsense swallowed. Abandoning each holy book, those leaders let us off the hook. So given all our good and treasure, we gave up grace and turned to pleasure. Then suddenly the pleasure stopped and out from us the bottom dropped. In times like these, I find it odd that few have said, let's turn to God. Instead, as this pandemic lurches, they lock the doors and close the churches. And we, as this drags year to year, have locked ourselves inside our fear. Now I can say without a doubt, from this there's only one way out. Reflect, and when your grief is grieved, return to what you once believed. For in the very darkest hour, trust there is a higher power. And let that trust renew your heart. It's not a lot, but it's a start. That's profit and loss. By Tarzana Joe.
If that was supposed to leave me lukewarm or conflicted, wrong call.
Okay.
Talk about something that is urgently needed. Now, it is, and what a key word this is, it's divisive, Joe. It's divisive. It will cause people to react in different ways, and Lord knows we can't have that. But
well,
my
so
reaction.
So is a can opener.
Exactly right. Electric or manual, it does get the job done, as do you. TarzanaJoe.com, at TarzanaJoe on Twitter. That was just superb. Listen, all your work is either particularly wry, particularly topical. That's a keeper for the ages, and I'm glad I was here to hear it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
it. Once again, kind and gracious. Thank you.
I so appreciate the great Tarzana Joe. Wow. Golly. Whew, and find all of his stuff as some of his past stuff. He wrote one called The 2021 Project. Maybe it was last week. So there at TarzanaJoe.com.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.